for News in Depth.
Cable News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to Cable News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. QDoc, Portland's queer documentary film festival, kicks off Friday, November 15th at the Hollywood Theater. For all the juicy details on this year's event, I spoke with festival co-directors Molly King and Deb Kemp. So for folks who don't know, what is QDoc?
QDoc Film Festival is a documentary film festival that is dedicated to LGBTQ plus documentaries and their makers. And it is one of the only film festivals in the world that's dedicated specifically to queer documentaries.
So you two, as the co-directors, you put this whole shebang together. What is the process like from, you know, QDoc last year to QDoc this year?
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, we were coming out of COVID last year. So it was, first thing that springs to mind is just everybody's comfort level of coming together again. And it's been really interesting, you know, process-wise. I can come back to, you know, how we pull this together, but it has been really interesting to see how much more comfortable everyone is being in close spaces together and wanting to be back with our communities. So that's made the process a little easier, which is great. But we start, as soon as one festival's over, we start reviewing films for the next and reaching out to directors, subjects and producers that we've worked with before, because we're a curated film festival, which means we don't take submissions. We actively find our lineup. And then we probably review about 100 films. And then we get to this point of our shortlist. And in addition to everything else that goes on with running big events.
Very nice. Any particular themes of the films on display this year?
You know, it's interesting. There are usually reoccurring themes. And one of the themes that we've seen highlighted in this year's event is celebrating known and unknown contemporary heroes. In particular, we've seen a real thread of musicians and artists.
Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly been the case. I think it's also interesting just seeing a lot more lesbian content and younger lesbian content and maybe a reclaiming of the word lesbian in itself. It's been awesome to see younger filmmakers, gay, lesbian, queer, however one chooses to identify, trans, of course, non-binary as well, just be able to have access to filmmaking materials and equipment, and even, you know, seeing films now being made on phones, of course, and just the quality of that filming and these gorgeous little stories that are coming together. So a lot more diversity of film selection options this year. It was really, really neat.
Filmed on a phone can be in a film festival. I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to talk through the lineup of each day of the festival, which is coming up this weekend. Let's start with Friday. The opening film is I'm Your Venus. Tell me about this.
You bet. I'm Your Venus was directed by Kimberly Reed, and it picks up where Jenny Livingston's 1990 landmark documentary Paris is Burning left off. Venus Extravaganza was one of the real standout stars of that documentary, and was tragically murdered. And this film, I mean, Venus, picks up where that story left off and takes the Pellegatti family, which is Venus's biological family as well as Venus's ballroom family and how they come together to piece together what happened.
Yeah, we're really thrilled. We're going to have a live performance from the Portland ballroom community at that screening of I'm Your Venus, as well as very, very acclaimed local directors, Michael Palmieri, Donna Mosier, are going to help us with the Q&A. Join us for the Q&A. So it's going to be a star-packed night. We're also opening with a short film about Alok that was, has been really well received so far in other festivals. So between a performance by the ballroom community, Alok and I'm Your Venus, and a great Q&A. It's going to be a fantastic way to kick off the fest.
And Genovia Chase, who is an executive producer for I'm Your Venus, who is also a ballroom legend. Folks might know her from her days on Pose as well. She's flying in from New York and joining us for that all-star packed opening night as well.
It sounds absolutely stacked, this opening night.
It is stacked.
It is stacked, and it's going to be a celebration. You know, we're really looking forward to, you know, celebrating queer stories on screen and having celebration and community.
Well, following up Stacked Night 1 on Saturday, there are 6 films screening. Can we talk through some of those? Give folks a little taste of what they might be able to see?
Yeah. Well, we'd love for everyone to be able to come to the first film that kicks off Saturday, Outliers and Outlaws, but it's sold out already. But come. So we're going to tell you how great it is. No. But there may be a few tickets for those that are keen to see it that will release just about 15 minutes before the screening. But anyway, what it's about is a legendary group of lesbians who started their own world, their own community down in Eugene, Oregon. This was a pretty famous group that basically set up this town in the 60s to 80s, and they had quite a vibrant lesbian community down in Eugene. We're absolutely thrilled that we're going to have some of those community members with us, of course, as well as the wonderful director Courtney Herman. A lot of people know Courtney, obviously, in Portland. It's going to be a world premiere, so we're pretty stoked that that's already sold out, and not too surprisingly. And it's also paired with a great little short film called Is Gay Marriage Next, which unfortunately seems to be even more so, again, an important topic to consider.
Mm-hmm. And then at 2:30, Code of Fear is playing. That one, I think, is sold out as well.
We've still got a few tickets actually left for that one. Yeah. So, you know, it's really good, you know, it's all very well to look at our US and our English-speaking countries, of course, for film, but this one, we've been really trying to find a great film from one of the African countries, and we have this film that's from mainly set in Cameroon and really just explores the lack of queer rights and the prejudice and the threat to livelihood and living as a queer person in Cameroon. Beautifully shot film, screens at 2:30. Highly recommend it, just to get out of our own bubble and see really what's going on in the rest of the world in the queer space.
Mm-hmm. And then at 4:30, The World According to Ali Willis.
You got it. Yep. Ali Willis is kind of one of those creatives, like one of the most magical creatives that no one's ever heard of. And Ali, actually, you may know her work from September, the song September, which she wrote.
Whoa.
The Color Purple soundtrack.
Theme song to Friends.
Theme song to Friends.
Yeah.
She was such a creative spirit, and she did such a wonderful job of documenting her life from her younger days in Detroit all the way to her time in L.A., and had a very famous network of friends. You know, she hobnobbed with Cyndi Lauper and the Pet Shop Boys and Joni Mitchell, and add in any that you can think of as well. Paul Rubens, also known as Pee Wee Herman,
yeah,
was known for hosting fabulous parties. So a true songwriter, musician, creative artist, fashionista, whose creative spirit, you know, was on fire, but in so much in her mind was looking for something else, and that ultimately was love. And so you see that struggle, and you get kind of a firsthand look of what was missing in her life and her journey towards finding love.
That's a great film. It's just so bright and vibrant and interesting. And that screens at 4:30 on Saturday. And then following up after that at 6:45, we're screening a film called Join the Club, which is actually about... It intermingles, obviously, the AIDS crisis in San Francisco, actually a little later than most people are familiar with in the 90s. And it really is around the first cannabis shop that existed in San Francisco, and how the proceeds of that were also really linked in with you know, helping Harvey Milk and his political candidacy. It's a great film. It's super interesting, awesome archival footage, just a fabulous, obviously, part of history and queer history. But yeah, come along and see that. It's fun as well and fast moving.
And a really, you know, important piece of history in rights of the passage of Prop 215, which was the, you know, national cannabis legislation. And yeah, like Deb said, it's a great film.
Yeah. And then we're finishing with another party. A House Is Not a Disco. Great film, just celebrating the community at Fire Island, you know, the Pines and Fire Island. This is really an interesting film because a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of listeners, have actually been up to Pines and Fire Island and experienced the wonderful parties and living. But, you know, it's also talking about just how climate change is affecting that particular community. So it's a little bit of a different take. Even though it's called A House Is Not a Disco, it does have quite a serious note to it too, which is really interesting to watch. And that's screening at 8:45.
One last day, Sunday, still packed with queer filmmaking. Talk me through some of these ones.
You bet. Well, we're kicking off Sunday with a film, the Oregon premiere of Sabbath Queen, and that was directed by Sandy Dabowski, who many people in the film community here are familiar with. And it's filmed over two decades, and it follows Rabbi Amitai Lau Lavi's journey of balancing life as a rabbi and a gay man, and that journey. And it's a beautiful film.
It's an incredible film. Yeah, it's really interesting. His family are multi-generationally, there are multi-generations of rabbis in his family. So it's not just that he's a rabbi, it's also just, their family is such an important, family within the Jewish community. And so for him to have this position of being queer and wanting to introduce queer acceptance into the faith, brings obviously a lot of internal and external conflict, and so it's just such an interesting film, and it still has moments of lightness and fun, which is really important. And just seeing his view at, in the film, I don't want to have any spoilers, but obviously on the current crisis in Israel-Palestine crisis, the film does touch on that very much so. And I think it's just a really poignant story and creates some great questions for all of us. And we will have a Q&A after that screening as well, which will be worth being here for.
Yeah, the executive producer of the film, who actually was involved with Sandy Dabowski on the film for, when Sandy was working on the film for 20 years, Adrian has been working on the film for over a decade. And so he has some really interesting insights into that process and the story and the narrative. And
Also shout out to the fairies. Any fairies out there, you know who you are, and come to this film. Obviously Amichai is a radical fairy, and definitely touches on the importance of the fairy community in the film as well.
So that's at noon on Sunday.
Yes, that's at 12.
Then at 2:30
we kick off with a film called, which I just love this title, it's called Bulletproof: A Lesbian's Guide to Surviving the Plot. And filmmaker Regan Latimer just takes this wonderful approach to using animation and actual, like, factual pieces of filmmaking to show how often queer characters are killed in film.
Bury your gaze, the trope.
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly.
It's just so beautifully put together. You know, we were talking about just before about the new prevalence of younger filmmakers and how snappy and fast-paced these films are that are coming out of, you know, our queer community, our queer filmmaking community. So this is just such a well-put-together film. Reagan's done a great job. We were hoping to have them come from Canada and from Toronto, but unfortunately not able to make it. But it's an Oregon premiere, and we're pairing it up with a cute little film called The History of the Carabiner. You and I were just talking before about carabiners. Ching, ching. That's it.
A little in the studio today.
It's just great. It's just sassy and just shows the role of such a small object, but how it signals identification and love. And it's a sweet little film. Both of those are screening at 2:30 on Sunday.
Two more on Sunday.
Yes.
You got it. Yep. And at 5 o'clock on Sunday, we are showing the Oregon premiere of Any Other Way, the Jackie Shane story. And Jackie Shane was a queer, black, trans, R&B and soul singer in the 60s from Nashville, but really had their stardom explode in the Canadian scene up in Montreal, Toronto, and played alongside the likes of Little Richard and Etta James and Jimi Hendrix. Incredible voice, just an incredible presence. And then disappeared from the stage. And this film, you know, picks up where Jackie Shane's family is piecing together, like, you know, where Jackie Shane went. And then finally gives Jackie Shane her due, really gives her flowers. And the film is winning awards around the world right now, and rightfully so, because it takes wonderful pieces of animation, these beautiful beautiful pieces of art to tell the story and pair with these real life phone conversations of Jackie Shane's. And so between the archival footage and the art and of course the real time storytelling, it's just a beautiful film and a beautiful tribute to a voice that we should all know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's the executive producer on that film is Alia Page, and it was also produced by obviously the Emmy Award winning Hip Hop Revolution. So it's Evolution, my bad, sorry. So yeah, super cool film.
And then to cap it all off, woo-hoo. Linda Perry, Let It Die Here at 7 on Sunday. Talk to me about that one.
We are over the moon to close the festival with this film. We're equally excited to have Linda Perry join us in person as well.
That's big.
It's big, as is director Don Hardy. You know, so many people know Linda as the former front woman for Non-Blondes. Everyone probably knows the lyrics to What's Up, but what folks might not know is what a prolific songwriter, producer, extraordinaire, and musician on her own, instrumentalist on her own. And this story dives into that piece, as well as the struggles that Linda has had to overcome, both, you know, personally and professionally, and it's just a really, really powerful, raw film, and the story behind how Don Hardy, the director, and Linda Perry met is really interesting. So I think folks are going to find that quite fascinating for that part of the Q&A. And then to cap it off, Linda's agreed to perform some songs for us at the festival. So.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
It is. It is so exciting. We'll make sure you have your tickets after this.
Okay, there we go. Well, I wanted to ask, is there, for both of you, is there one screening in particular that you're most looking forward to?
I love it when you ask that question.
Yeah, it's like talking about your favorite kids, isn't it? You know, like, there's little pieces of these films that we're really proud of this lineup. We are always continually wowed by filmmakers and subjects who are so brave to tell their stories.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it's not so much of a favorite individual film, but what I'm so looking forward to is really leaning into community this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, I think for a lot of folks, particularly in our community, we maybe had a rough week last week, and we are really looking forward to that time of being together, celebrating these stories on screen, interacting with these brave folks and filmmakers and subjects and directors and producers and artists, and being together.
Yeah. No, totally echoing that, you know, with the screening of Outliers and Outlaws, just, you know, recognising our local history, having Courtney Herman and a lot of the subjects, and obviously a lot of the other film production team for that film here, a full house already. I think it's going to be a really special way to kick off Saturday at 12. Just to be a part of the local group of film fans. Tickets are going so well this year, which they went well last year as well. But like I was saying before, I think people were a little cautious coming out of COVID. It's really noticeable how much people want to come together. So we can't wait to see everyone down there.
If our listeners want to find out more about QDoc, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, you can just jump on our website, www.qdocfilmfest.org, and you can see the full lineup there, and then links to tickets, of course, from there. And we offer free tickets for anyone aged 23 and under, free tickets for those aged 75 plus, and then $2 off for students and $2 off for 62 to 75 year olds. So, you know, our goal always is to pack the theatre, and we hope people take advantage of that.
And you can also follow us on the socials. We're on Instagram at QDoc Film Fest, and we're on Facebook at QDoc Film Fest, and we used to be on Twitter and X, but we were making
our... Yeah, definitely not.
An exodus, if
we're
you
making
will.
Ooh,
I like that.
Putting the X in exodus.
And this is all at the Hollywood Theater. I don't know if
yes,
you mentioned that.
Good question.
Yep, you got it. Yep, point. All screenings are at the Hollywood Theater, and we kick off Friday, November 15th, and go all the way through Sunday, November 17th.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, we just hope to see everyone down there.
Yeah, come for one film, come for all the films, or come and just give us a hug in the lobby. But we'd love to see everyone.
And make lots of good films and send them our way.
There you go. Well, thank you both so much for being here.
Oh, thanks so much, as always, for having us. And thank you, KBOO, for doing everything that you do for this community.
100%.
That was Deb Kemp and Molly King, the co-directors of QDoc, Portland's Queer Documentary Film Festival. The full lineup is online at qdocfilmfest.org. It kicks off Friday, November 15th at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I am speaking with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his latest article for the paper. It's called Food for Resistance. Zenger Farms celebrates 25 years of creating equitable food systems. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hi, Althea. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So your latest feature delves into Zenger Farms and their Dia de los Muertos celebration. For folks who may not have heard of this before, tell me about Zenger Farms.
Zenger Farms is a nonprofit organization that is out in the Powell Hurst Gilbert neighborhood off of Foster. They have been there, like you said, for 25 years as a nonprofit, and then prior to that as sort of a family-owned small farm who sort of restored some wetlands out there. And we can get into a little bit more of that in a second, but that's kind of the gist of it.
There's a few different components to this, like you mentioned, but restoration is one of them. Tell me about where they're located and the work they've done on the land.
Yeah, so 7 acres of the wetlands on their 24-acre total farmlands was basically sort of destroyed from cattle farming some decades ago, and they made an agreement with the city of Portland to restore those wetlands that had been destroyed due to pretty bad water runoff from that cattle farming. And so they have restored the native plants and the water out there. There's a lot of new birds and wildlife that comes through there and kind of uses it as a refuge. And they also provide, through that deal with the city of Portland, educational opportunities for young people, just sort of a kind of generational kind of teaching of how to take care of the land and have access to that land that a lot of communities have been kept from having that access in the past.
Well, yeah, this educational component is part of their deal with the city, and it also involves fifth grade kids at David Douglas. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, they have a farming program where essentially every kid in the David Douglas school district comes through there. They do four hour tours and working educational opportunities on the farm. And you know, that's just kind of one aspect of it. They said they've had some 7,000 kids over the years come through there to learn about the cultural significance of the land, things like, you know, climate change and different ways of farming, gardening, and yeah, it's kind of a cool opportunity for kids just like literally for the last 25 years being able to go through there and learn this in a really unique way.
Well, food justice is a big one of Zenger Farm's focuses. Can you explain how they work on that issue?
The broader food justice movement is sort of this idea that, you know, healthy food is a human right, and it helps to kind of address these structural barriers. In Oregon, this sort of dispossession of land, particularly farmland, you know, all across the United States, but also here in Oregon, you know, including like indigenous land stolen from tribes, Chinese Exclusion Acts in the early 20th century, internment of Japanese Americans in the 1940s, and then this obviously decades-long seizure of land from black farmers has all happened in Oregon. And so kind of addressing food and health through the lens of farming and possession of land and access to good, healthy food is really just a big part of that broader movement as a whole, and then something that is a really central piece of the Zenger Farms approach as well.
And food access is part of that as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. In that neighborhood, which is a very diverse neighborhood out in Powell, Hurst, Gilbert, and Lentz nearby, those are some of the most diverse neighborhoods in all of Oregon. And so they have some CSA boxes that they, like 300 boxes that they deliver to low-income people, predominantly people of color who are in that neighborhood, and just some other sort of educational programs that give people the kinds of resources that are much less available in that part of the city.
What are the main takeaways that you hope folks get from this story?
I think I came into this story kind of thinking about, you know, it was right before the election that Zenger Farms threw this Dia de los Muertos celebration, and there's this generational educational aspect just in the Dia de los Muertos tradition, and connecting people to the memories of their loved ones that they have maybe never met, but you know, that piece of it and like the connection to the land is something that, you know, just a few days before the election at that point, you know, there's a lot of concern with people about the systems that we have right now. And a sort of important piece, I think, of abolition of oppressive systems is doing things that are really sincerely rooted in the community and community care. And sort of taking that, shifting that food system from one of exploitation, you know, specifically with a lot of the people who are working and are run the farm out there, and into one of care, can be something that actually is somewhat of a political move. And in times like these, doing those simple things can actually make a pretty great difference.
If our listeners are interested in finding out more, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way to get Street Roots is to buy a print copy from a vendor there in your neighborhood and accept cash, Venmo, and tips. And you can also find us at streetroots.org.
Thanks, Jeremiah.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you.
That was Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, speaking with me about his latest article. It's called Food for Resistance. Zenger Farm celebrates 25 years of creating equitable food systems. You've been listening to KABU News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hello and welcome to For the Wild podcast. I'm Ayana Young. Today we are speaking with Kimberly Ann Johnson.
They don't really think that pleasure is the pathway to the healing. And it is. It is. And pleasure.